I'll ask for a show of hands. How many people recognize the picture of Art Linkletter? Well, there's a few people that do. Okay. Interestingly, he was a TV, radio, and then TV celebrity. He used to have a program called House Party, and it ran from something like 1945 until 1969. So it ran for like 20 years. And there's a segment in that program that was called Kids Say the Darndest Things. And he would interview them, and he was one of the first people I ever remember having this great facial animation. So they would say something really crazy, and then he would, you know, look off to the camera and have a zany face. But he was always very focused on what the kids did and made sure he didn't embarrass the kids. And that section, series of programs, again, if you're interested, you could look him up on the internet and have some examples of him interviewing kids. And it's just funny, the things that they say innocently, they don't realize that that it might not be appropriate. I remember one interview, he's asking someone about his mom, and they were saying, "Oh yeah, she's got red hair now," not realizing that it's not really appropriate to talk about people changing their hair color. So again, I tried to grab one of his expressions on his face where he's kind of showing a puzzlement. But interestingly, I was at the community pool that's just two blocks away from my house. I took my granddaughter there, and we were having an awesome day, a beautiful sunny day. The pool, one of the claims to fame for the pool in Kingston, in case you didn't know, is that the filtration system is so good that the water is five times cleaner in the pool than it is out of the drinking water tap, which is kind of amazing. Anyhow, there's a giant diving board. There's also a giant water slide, lots of twists and turns that happen in it. And this year, she's age 7, was the first year that she was tall enough to be over the line so that she was able to go on the water slide. So her first day, she was having a great time on the water slide. And she's courageous as well. And so she was going on the diving board and jumping off and doing her best to touch the bottom, because it's a really, really deep pool to have a diving board as well. So we were having an awesome time. And one of the other sections they have, they call the Lazy River. And at one time, when the pool first opened, they had mattresses and stuff where people could just sit there and go around the lazy river. Now, they don't use the mattresses and just have people get shot around by the jets of water that are in the lazy river, and you're going kind of in a figure eight. It's lots of fun. And it's popular, too. So sometimes there's a lineup outside the lazy river for people to leave so that others can go in. On the day I'm talking about, Sylvia happened to be over near the edge where there's some other people just on the other side of a tiny wall. So they couldn't really see each other. Turned out there's a boy on the other side. He must have been maybe 10. Sylvia's 7. Anyhow, he had one of these rubber pool noodle things, and he whipped it across the wall and hit Sylvia in the head. And me being a protective grandfather, picked up Sylvia and I held her, and then I loomed over the wall, saw this little 10-year-old, and I said, "Do you have something to say to her?" And he looks up and says, "I'm sorry." Again, he saw that she was holding her head, and so he realized that he must have hit someone. And so Sylvia said, "You know, it's okay." And then we continued on and had the rest of our day. And I was thinking to myself, boy, I wanted to beat that little kid with that noodle, because it made me angry. But at the end of the day, I was asking Sylvia, "Hey, what did you like? What was your favorite part of today?" And she said, she didn't say the water slide, she didn't say the diving board, she didn't say the big pool that we played at. She said, "I liked it when the boy said he was sorry." And again, That reminded me of kids say the darndest things, because I'd never in a million years would have guessed that that was a highlight of her day. And it kind of tells me a little bit about society, where she must not get a lot of "I'm sorry" from, you know, little boys or other people when you know something happens and people tend not to apologize today. And so it struck me that she thought that the highlight was, "Boy, I really liked it when he said he was sorry." And so I thought, since my attitude was wanting to beat the little kid with a noodle, and she was appreciative of what happened, it might be an appropriate subject to speak about, the subject of anger. Anger, the Cambridge Dictionary says, is a strong feeling that makes you want to hurt someone or be unpleasant because of something unfair or unkind that has happened. Anger can impact marriages and families and churches and workplaces as well. Scripture says a lot about anger. The New King James Bible, it's listed 228 times, the word anger. And the word angry, 42 times. And the word wrath, 194 times. Scripture says a lot about the subject of anger. Scripture clearly shows God gets angry, but he can be reached. The first scripture I've listed here is the story of the golden calf. It happens in Exodus 32, verses 10 to 14. It says, and this is God talking to Moses, "So now do not stop me." Again, they both see the golden calf, and God is furious with what Israel's doing. So he's saying to Moses, "So now do not stop me. I am so angry with them that I'm going to destroy them. Then I'll make you and your descendants a great nation." So again, God had to think about, well, if I destroy Israel, I did have a plan. So he came up with the, "I'll make you a great nation, Moses." And it says, "But Moses begged the Lord his God and said, 'Lord, don't let your anger destroy your people, whom you brought out of Egypt with your great power and strength. Don't let the people of Egypt say, the Lord brought the Israelites out of Egypt for an evil purpose. He planned to kill them in the mountains and destroy them from the earth. So stop being angry and don't destroy your people. Remember the men who served you, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. You promised with an oath to them and said, 'I will make your descendants as many as the stars of the sky. I will give your descendants all this land that I have promised them, and it'll be theirs forever.' So the Lord changed his mind and did not destroy the people as he said he might." So here we have an example of God's anger. It was a righteous anger because Israel was, you know, worshiping this golden calf. They didn't have the patience to wait for Moses to come down from the mountain. And Moses was given this great gift of the Ten Commandments, which is an awesome blessing for this people. So they were the target of God's anger at that moment. But interestingly, Moses was able to reason and to coax even God to not be angry and to not to flash out in anger. So we see in this example, because it's God that's angry, anger isn't a sin. It's not a sin to be angry. It's a reaction or emotion that we have in common with God. Ephesians 4:26 says, "Be angry, but sin not." So that gives us a clue or some coaching that says anger is a normal emotion. We're going to feel anger, and there's nothing we can do about it. Everybody in this room has had times when they've gotten angry, and it's not wrong to get angry about things. This topic is important because we all get angry. It's also important because the people around us also get angry, and we have to deal with that anger that occurs in other people. And there can be consequences to anger, because when people thrash out in anger, often good things don't happen because of that. Sometimes the anger is perfectly right and righteous because there's so much evil that happens in the world. I think in terms of, hearing that Tommy Robinson's being thrown back in jail for, in this case, it'll be another couple months, but he was sentenced for another 9 months, but he's already served some of that time. When you're faced with that kind of injustice, you get sad about it, you get discouraged, but you also get angry. Why? How can a judge rule in that fashion? When we see things happen around us every day, for example, on the way here, I was commenting, gas is $1.28 point whatever it is. and I think, wow, there's carbon taxes being applied that make it even worse, that there's things that we don't necessarily believe in. Many don't believe in, man-made climate change, that we should be collecting money because that money isn't going to make, 1 degree of difference in the next 100 years. The things that we can do about it at this point. So even if you believe climate change is valid, collecting money by taxing people isn't going to change or fix that problem. That's not what they're trying to do with that tax. So it's important, this topic is important because we need to know how we can understand and help people when they get angry, and we can help ourselves as well. The pictures at the top, I often don't refer to the pictures, but I thought that they were pretty significant. It says that anger is a mask. It covers up your true feelings, like fear, jealousy, frustration, powerlessness. It's a way of dealing with a situation you haven't processed the real feelings behind it. So when I wanted to beat that poor child with the pool noodle, part of it was frustration and powerlessness that injustices like that happen. And again, I didn't think in terms of, I'm sad that this happened. I'm sad that she's, that she's kind of rubbing her head. And so it's interesting that anger is the initial explosion, but there's something behind anger. And in every case that anger occurs, what you need to do is to try to understand within yourself, what is it that I'm really feeling? Anger is the way I'm expressing it, but what is it that I'm really feeling? Is it sadness or is it frustration? Is it jealousy? Is it whatever? And we need to do that with ourselves, and we also need to do it externally. If someone's angry with us, why are they angry? The one example, I might have mentioned it here at one point in the past, there was a day that I was leaving my house. This is when I lived out in the country in Perth Road Village, on a dirt road before you get to the main road, and there's a stop sign, and there's never anyone there because it's in the country. So one day I wasn't really paying attention. I was a little upset about something, and I just continued without stopping at the stop sign, and sure enough it was on a corner, and someone else was having to swerve to miss me, and when I saw them, I thought, I better speed up to get ahead of them. So I went ahead and did that. There was no accident, but we both stopped. He happened to be in front, and he jumped out of the car. I had either my son or my daughter beside me, so I jumped out of the car as well. And was he ever angry? He came back to me, and I'm sure he wanted to lay hands on me not in a nice way. I got out of the car and I said, I'm sorry, I was distracted, I wasn't paying attention. When I saw you coming around the corner, I did the best I could to get out of your way. This is totally my fault, and I apologize. Of course, he was walking at me angrily, he was trying to get to me, but by the time he got to me, his total expression had changed. And he said, I appreciate you saying that, and he put his hand out, and he said, I want to shake your hand. We shook hands, and I didn't get beat up in front of my child. So there's a there's a scripture we'll come to that that talks about that whole concept. And that scripture is the idea that a soft answer turns away wrath. And when anger happens in yourself or in someone else, very often, the words that you pick, a soft answer, something that shows that you understand the situation, you understand why they're angry, and you take responsibility, it can defuse the situation instantly. In Genesis 4, verse 3, we have the example of Cain. And we have God speaking with Cain. And it says, in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of fruit of the ground to the Eternal. Abel also brought the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering. But he did not respect Cain and his offering, and Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you don't do well, sin lies at the door. Its desire is for you, but it should not roll over you." So the point that God was making is, you know, it just requires a small change, and you will be accepted. You know, you don't need to be angry about this. So if we try to understand, using the ideas of the masks that are in the pictures above, you know, what is it that Cain was feeling? He was probably feeling jealousy because his brother's offering was accepted, and frustration that his was not accepted, that he's powerless, that, you know, it's out of his control, although it's not really out of his control. The circle shows, you know, some things like sadness. He was sad that God didn't accept his offering. And guilt. He probably felt a bit guilty because maybe he didn't bring the best for God. And maybe he realized, you know, I just threw this together. I didn't really give it consideration. And I was giving something to God. I shouldn't have done that. And there's hurt, and then there's shame because, you know, the whole world knows that God didn't accept my offering, and my brother knows that God didn't accept my offering, although God accepted his. And insecurity. So all of these things are masks to anger. His response was anger, but the feelings that led to that anger are listed here. And what God explained to him is, you know, why are you angry? All you have to do is a small change in your behavior, and you'll be accepted, and things will be great. We know that Cain didn't learn his lesson from that, and in this case, his anger led him to sin. But we understand from what God said to him that that didn't have to happen that way. In Genesis 31:36, we have an interesting example. Margaret, during the circle that we had today, was making a point about sometimes anger can be righteous and just. And here we have an example of that using Jacob. If you remember the story, Jacob went and worked for Laban, and he worked 7 years so that he could have his wife, his Laban's daughter, for his wife. And after 7 years, he was tricked and was given another daughter instead. So instead of Rachel, he got Leah as a daughter. So he said he'd work another 7 years for Leah. And after that, he needed to work more because he needed some property, some of his own possessions. And so he worked another 6 years after that so that he could have some flocks and some possessions. So for 20 years, he was a faithful son-in-law, working for Laban, and a good worker. And God blessed Laban because Jacob was such a good worker. But at the end of it, Jacob knew, you know, my father-in-law is probably not going to want to let me go. So we're going to pack up and we're going to just head out. And his father-in-law chased after him. And his father-in-law accused him of, you know, stealing some of the house idols. And at this point, Jacob had it up to here, and he needed to talk to his father-in-law and set things straight. And here's what Jacob said in his anger. It said, when Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban, and Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you've so hotly pursued me? Although you've searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? The answer is nothing. Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. He found nothing. These 20 years I've been with you, your ewes and female goats have not miscarried their young, and I've not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beasts, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether it was stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was. In the day the drought consumed me, the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. It's not easy work protecting livestock. You're out there day and night often. Thus I've been in your house 20 years, and I've served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you've changed my wages 10 times. And unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labors of my hands and rebuked you last night. The reference there has to do with God sent a dream to Laban saying, don't touch him. Don't do anything for his good. Don't do anything for his evil. Let Jacob do what he's going to do. And so Laban was allowing Jacob to go, but he did pursue him. And in his anger, Jacob set things straight. He made his case about why, you know, Laban should be treating him a lot better than he has. He'd been a faithful son-in-law, a faithful worker, and Laban was blessed for all the years that Jacob had worked for him. And so he was pointing out that, Laban, you've been unfair to me. And sometimes, whether it's in anger or not, a clearing like that, where you make your point, you make your case to someone, can be, you know, very helpful and really help a situation. On the next page, it has a list of reasons for getting angry. I'll just go through some of them. It talks about grief, losing a loved one. Sometimes people show that by getting angry. Sexual frustration is another reason. Do we all not have a show? No, we won't have a show of hands. Rudeness, tiredness, hunger, pain, physical illness. You can get angry about those things. Mental illness, financial problems, being told you have a serious illness, injustice, being teased or bullied, humiliation, embarrassment. Deadlines can make you angry. Traffic jams, disappointment, sloppy service. I had a situation once where Patrice and Laurent had come to Kingston to visit, and I was taking them out to the Mandarin. And Patrice has a hearing issue, so she needs to be against a wall because it sounds all around her can either make her dizzy or she can't really hear properly. And so the first table they were taking us to wasn't working, but there's another table that was being set up. And then rather than walking all the way to the front again, we just said, can we go to that table? And so that was fine. For 35 minutes, they ignored us. Nobody came. And again, I was mad. I'm paying good money to bring my friends here to this restaurant, and you guys are ignoring me. And when the manager came, they heard about it. And again, that's an example of how sloppy service can bring out anger. We weren't trying to cheat the place. We weren't doing anything like that. If somebody had messed up by not handing a card to the servers, then you know that's their error, not mine. And as a customer, you know, no customer should be faced with that. So sloppy service. The other thing I really hate is potholes, but it's not on the list. Failure, infidelity, burglary are other examples they give of reasons for getting angry. In 1 Chronicles 13, verse 8, we have an interesting situation where we have double anger. We have God being angry, and we have King David being angry. Here we have this situation where David is wanting to move the Ark of the Covenant to closer to where he's going to be. And David wanted to make it special. So he arranged for this great festivity where it says, David and all Israel played music before the Eternal with all their might, singing on harps, stringed instruments, tambourines, cymbals, and with trumpets. It was a glorious, festive, lots of instruments, lots of happiness. We're serving God by moving the Ark of the Covenant. And this is a special day before God. And it says, when they came to Chidon's threshing floor, Uzzah put out his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled. So the way they chose to move the ark was to put it on a cart that's being pulled by oxen. And when the oxen stumbled, it was getting jostled, Uzzah just put his hand up to steady the Ark of the Covenant so it didn't fall off onto the ground. Verse 10, then the anger of the Lord was aroused against Uzzah, and he struck him because he put his hand to the ark. And he died there before God. So God's instructions about handling holy things, sacred things, was clear that no one just reaches up and touches stuff. And God struck Uzzah dead. We have the benefit of knowing that when Uzzah's resurrected, the first thing he's going to realize is that what he did was wrong. Not correct before God. So we have the understanding that Uzzah's punishment isn't eternal, but he was struck dead for what he did. Verse 11, and David became angry because God's the Lord's outbreak against Uzzah. Therefore the place is called Perez Uzzah to this day. And David was afraid of God that day, saying, how can I bring the Ark of God to me? So it started out a day of special celebration and hoping to honor God. Something happened where God had to strike someone dead, and then David was angry. So God was angry because that happened. David was angry because we're trying to honor you, God, and you struck somebody dead. So we have a case of double anger there. And again, if we try to understand what was behind it, so God is using this as a teaching moment that you don't touch sacred things, holy things, and things shouldn't be handled in an incorrect manner. As it turns out, the idea of putting the Ark of the Covenant on a cart to carry it isn't the way that God wanted it to be done. There are special staves that long poles that were meant to be used to lift it, and people would carry the Ark. And that way, if one of them stumbled, there's still at least three other people that are carrying it, and so nobody has to touch the Ark of the Covenant when it's carried properly. So there were some lessons to be learned by people that day. And that's what ultimately happened is they studied into it. They realized what they'd done that was incorrect. And after a few months, the Ark was moved. So it says that anger is not always wrong. Sometimes it's absolutely necessary. There's evil in the world, and sometimes evil in our own lives. And so, for those reasons, we need to be aware that sometimes anger is necessary. If you are confronted with an injustice, sometimes you need to get angry about it to show people how you feel, that what is being done isn't right, and that you don't necessarily stand for what's being done. The list at the bottom here is the 7 most important anger questions to ask yourself. So if you're trying to determine, is my anger correct, or is it godly anger, or is it just human anger? We could say there's at least 2 types. Godly anger is always just and right. Human anger, not necessarily. Sometimes it is right and just, and other times it's not. So here's 7 questions that form a list of things that you might ask yourself about the anger that you feel so that you can better understand about that anger. So the first one is, What am I really angry about? So sometimes the thing that happens isn't really what you're angry about. There are situations where you might, take something out on someone else when you're really angry at someone that you can't say things about. So you have a bad day at work, you really want to yell at your boss, but instead you come home and kick the puppy. There's a term for that. I guess it's when you're projecting your anger to the wrong source. So what am I really angry about? So you need to understand what it is that is triggering your emotion. Next, what is the problem and whose problem is it? So sometimes we might get angry about what's happening with Tommy Robinson over there, but it's not necessarily our problem and it's not something that we can necessarily do something about. So instead of raising our blood pressure and getting all upset about something that we can't necessarily control, sometimes it's better to look around and deal with things that we can better control. Not to say that we don't have a worldview and perhaps an impact on the world in what we choose to do, but what is the problem and whose problem is it is something we need to ask ourselves. Number three, how can I sort out who is responsible for what? Sometimes things are very plain and simple and obvious. If there's a softball that's come crashing through your window and there's somebody with a bat standing in front of your door, well, you know who probably broke the window. Although sometimes what happens is everybody scatters and the field is empty and you look out and you know that there's a ball in your house, but you don't know necessarily who did it. And so the idea of how can I sort out who's responsible for what is, that's an example where you might get angry about it, but sometimes you're not necessarily going to be able to figure out more complex issues. How can I learn to express my anger, number four, in a way that will not leave me feeling helpless and powerless? So often, the situation that happens is something that, you end up feeling helpless and powerless because you can't necessarily do or say anything about it. So for example, if something happens at work and it's your boss and you're angry with them, the best thing to do is not to go to the cafeteria when your boss is standing there and there's a bunch of people around and chewing your boss out in front of everyone. You might feel like doing it, but that's a bad idea. You might be able to write a note, though, to your boss saying, this is a situation. I don't think what you did was just. And you could express your views there in a note that's respectful, saying, I understand that you're in charge, but here's the way that I think that you should have handled it. So learning to express anger in a way that will not leave you helpless and powerless. Number five, when I'm angry, how can I clearly communicate my position without becoming defensive or attacking? So again, when I loomed over that poor child that was holding the pool noodle in his hand, perhaps that wasn't the best way of getting a sincere apology from him. He was going to apologize, but he wasn't necessarily sincere. And so when I'm angry, how can I clearly communicate without becoming defensive or attacking? He saw the, I better say I'm sorry or I might be in trouble. And again, my granddaughter saw a sincere apology, and that was what was most important. But the idea of using your dominance or your presence to push something out of someone is perhaps an inappropriate use of anger. What risks and losses might I face if I become clearer or more assertive? So sometimes becoming more assertive isn't going to win you the points that you hope are going to win you. If you are discussing something at work in a team, your coworker has a goofy idea and you just keep pointing out the goofiness of their idea and the superiority of your idea, that assertiveness is going to make that employee, that coworker of yours, not like you very much because you're embarrassing them in a large group. So being assertive or clearer about something isn't necessarily always a good thing. And so again, there's a time and place and a way to handle things. And again, they call that tact. When you handle things tactfully, you're not going to generate more anger. And point seven, if getting angry is not working for me, what can I do differently? So again, we've looked at the list, and again, the list on the prior page of the mask of anger. What are the alternate things that might help relieve some of the anxiety and fear, insecurity, guilt, shame, or hurt that you might be feeling? All of those feelings that are triggering anger, what are other things that might work to help with those? So if you ask yourself those questions when you're getting angry, then by the time you get through a list of seven of them, you're going to forget what you're angry about in the first place. But hopefully you'll understand better the anger and what was generating it. Next couple of illustrations. One is called the anger iceberg. And it's really just making the point that anger is the outburst, but there's a whole bunch of things below the surface that are triggering that anger. And if you take a second and just read what some of those things can be that trigger anger. And again, as we see, being embarrassed can cause anger, guilt, being overwhelmed, nervous, disrespected, worried, jealous, many other things. So the intent of this is to show that anger is the little bit of the iceberg that appears above the surface. So people can see that, but they can't see necessarily what the reasons are. And so in yourself, when you're looking at the anger of other people or you're looking at your own anger, these are some of the things that you can be looking for as to what the real cause is, what's the real issue. The anger spectrum is meant to show that there's different ways of displaying anger. For some, it's loud, and with others, it's subtle. And so an example of loud anger is road rage and verbal abuse and cursing and being boiling mad, physical abusive. Subtle anger is, as they say, more subtle. It could be things like maybe gossiping, saying something bad about someone behind their back, that's quiet, slandering them. Could be something like rolling your eyes, negativity, huffing under your breath. I'll give an example of that as well. Stubbornness, dismissiveness. So again, apathy, where you just choose, well, I'm just not going to participate anymore. And again, in the center there, it's calling that a form of even of manipulation. And so when you're angry about something, there's lots of things you can do. Some are loud and some are subtle. And again, you need to analyze, is what you're doing when you're angry appropriate? Or is what you're doing manipulative or harsh? A truism is that we cannot control how we feel, but we can control how we act. So again, using the pool example, I didn't beat the poor child to within an inch of his life with the pool noodle. I controlled how I acted. I was angry and I wanted to, but I didn't do that. Another example might be if somebody at night is walking and a robber comes up with a gun and sticks the gun in your face and says, "Give me your wallet." You might feel angry that he's stealing from you, but the way that you conduct yourself is to be very respectful of the person. You don't want to have any misunderstanding. He asked for your wallet. No problem, sir. I'm going to reach for it now. You do whatever you can to make sure that he's not going to misunderstand and shoot you, because your life is not worth the contents of what is in your pocket. And so that's an example where you might feel angry that this is happening to you. Same kind of thing when the policeman pulls you over. You might be angry that the policeman pulled you over, but you're not going to express it to him because instead of the one thing that you might have been doing, speeding, he might have three or four other things that he could charge you for, and all he needs is for you to shoot off your mouth for him to decide, yeah, your taillight is broken and your insurance paperwork is out of date. So there's lots of other things that they can do. So we understand we can't control how we feel, but we can control how we act. So that's important in understanding that when we talk about anger. And here we have a point. This was made in one of the Prager University videos. And I thought it was a powerful point because he says, one rule, one thing, if there's only one thing that you take mind of, one rule that will enable you to control your anger and almost guarantee you will never say something that will lead to a irrevocable break or permanent hurt in your relationship. So one thing, and it's a guarantee. Well, what is it? I want to know. It says, no matter how angry you get, restrict the expression of your anger to the incident that provoked it. So don't be saving up this whole list of grievances that you have against someone, and then they do the one straw that breaks the camel's back, and then you let go with everything that they've ever done to you that has upset you. That's poison. That's inappropriate response, and that type of anger is never going to resolve anything. So it says, this means when somebody has done wrong and has hurt you, express anger for what they did. So it's not wrong to express anger for someone did something that hurt you. But don't use words like always or never. You always do blah, 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 blah. Or you never do this and this. Because that always is going to end up being a lie. Well, there was one time that I was nice and I did this. I bought flowers for you or whatever it might be. And so it says don't use words like always or never because it instantly makes the other person defensive because they'll think of a reason why, oh, yes, there was one time when I did this, then it made what you said incorrect. And it ends up taking focus away from the incident that caused the anger. Because you're now talking about the past and a whole bunch of other hurts that may or may not have been properly resolved in the past. So, they have that as one rule that will almost guarantee you'll never say something that will lead to an irrevocable break or permanent hurt in your relationship. So it's okay to be angry, but leave the anger for exactly what the incident was that made you angry, not all the peripheral things that might fit in with that. The dark box that's in the middle of the page says, for man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. So here it's making a distinction between godly anger and man's anger. And that's from James 1:20. And if we go to the verse before it, I have it listed just above it, where it says, James 1:19, so then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. So the idea of being swift to hear, most of the time you should be listening. Slow to speak, it's okay to talk, and slow to wrath is, again, something you do a lot, you listen a lot more than you get angry or shoot off your mouth. So, what's the reason why we want to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath? The next verse is the James 1:20. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. So we need to be careful to stamp out incorrect anger, what they call man's anger in this verse. So the next section talks about 10 most common styles or types of anger, and I asked the question, which describes you? So of the 10 types, again, there's 5 different categories, and each one has 2 possibilities. 5 times 2 is 10. So the first one, the direction of the anger, is it internal or external? So some people, it's just their natural inclination to drive things internally, to not strike out against others, but to bring the anger, you know, internally against themselves. And others, it's never their fault. Every problem is somebody else's, and so it's external to them. So that's one type or style of anger. The anger reaction, is it retaliatory or resistant? So are you retaliating against something that's done against you, or resisting when someone's trying to do something to you? The mode of anger, is it physical or verbal? Some people are very verbal, and if you do something to make them angry, they will chirp at you for a really long time. But they'll use words to express what they feel. Other people are a few words, and they'll often strike out physically. Anger, impulsivity, is it controlled or uncontrolled? So again, many people have control of their anger, where other people are like, they talk about them having a short fuse. You light off that fuse and they're uncontrolled and they're just going to explode at you. And the last is what they call the objective of anger. Is it restorative or punitive? So again, I'll use the, perhaps this might be the last time I'll use that noodle example again. My granddaughter wanted restorative. I wanted punitive. I wanted to beat that little kid. My granddaughter just wanted the apology. She realizes accidents happen. Sometimes, if you're not watching what happens, you hit someone with a pool noodle. It's not a big deal. By saying sorry, everything was restored and she was happy. Punitive is where your anger leads you to, that's not good enough, I want to punish that little rascal and he's going to get it. And so, again, you need to understand the objective of anger. It's interesting to see all these different dynamics that exist of how anger can be expressed. In Psalm 7:11 it says, God is a just judge, and God is angry with the wicked every day. So it's saying here that God is angry every day, not because he's an angry person. God's angry with the wicked every day because every day the wicked are doing wicked things. And God gets angry when he sees wickedness. And God is just. In Proverbs 22, verses 24 to 25, it says, make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul. So once again, anger is something God expresses, but when man expresses it and expresses it poorly, it's not something that you want to, align yourself with. So the advice of stay away from angry people is proverbial. It's good advice. In Colossians 3:8, one of the things Paul points out, he says, but now you yourselves are to put off all these. So here's what Paul's instructions to Christians are. He says, put off anger and wrath and malice and blasphemy and filthy language out of your mouth. The reason for that is because we're to become a new man, a new person. And you can't become a new person if you have anger and wrath, filthy language, all of those things. The chart that, or the diagram that's shown on the last page is intended to show how anger can, how it can be manifested. What are all the possibilities that might occur when anger happens? So it starts off at the left of the page where everything's okay, and then perhaps an insult happens and you get angry. Now, that could be resolved right away and you go back to being okay again. Or you might decide to retaliate, and then it switches from being angry to being enraged. And then retaliation again can happen, and it could become violent. Or other possibilities is instead of becoming enraged, just become resentful. And so when you're resentful, it could be passive-aggressive, So you could be covertly violent. I'm going to sneak around and do something to get that person. Or it could be, you know, more visible. And again, when you become resentful, you could be isolated, or and that involves things like shunning the person, withdrawing yourself. I'm taking my ball and not playing anymore with you. And again, these are all responses to anger. And hopefully, you know, it doesn't come to this, that you could look at the causes of what's causing the anger, what's causing you to feel certain ways, and you can deal with it. Because again, the hope is we get back to the idea of being okay. Or, it's shown in the bottom left, the idea of reconciliation, where there's an apology that's accepted, remorse is recognized, and there's forgiveness, and there's letting go of that anger. So I say that Christians need to get anger under control. Matthew 5:21, Christ is talking here, and he says, "You have heard it said of old that you shall not murder, but whoever murders is in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. And whoever says, you fool, will be in danger of hellfire." So again, anger is a subject that can impact even your eternal life. So it's something that we need to clearly get under control. Who is our brother? Well, everyone is our brother. And so all the people we're relating with, we don't want to have a wrong relationship. Christ is saying that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment. So the anger that you have needs to be appropriate to what the offense was. In Proverbs 15 it says, "A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." The first time I heard that was not from reading the Bible. It was from watching the Beverly Hillbillies. Granny was always feuding with Miss Drysdale across the fence or the field. But one day she was feeling particularly sweet. And she was saying, you know, "A soft answer turns away wrath." And so even though Mrs. Drysdale was sometimes crabby, Granny was going to be pleasant and use soft answers. And of course, the comedy in a show like that is showing how really hard it is to use a soft answer. And Mrs. Drysdale, you know, pecked at her with a couple of things, and eventually Granny blew up and the feud was on. But the concept of a soft answer turning away wrath certainly has been important in my life. It saved me from getting a beating in front of my child when I cut somebody off in the car and they felt road rage. And so it's something that that we can use as a tool in dealing with anger. And the last verse I have is Proverbs 16:32, where it says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." So as a teenager, when I read that, I was thinking, you know, the Bible talks about, you know, great heroes, David and his mighty men, and how they were great warriors and fighters, and again, they're listed in the Bible. You know, how awesome is that? But what it says is, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules the spirit than he who takes a city." So I've not put on armor, weapons, and tried to take a city. I don't need to. God is saying that if you can control, be slow to anger, and rule your spirit, control yourself, that in God's eye, you're better than someone who's a great warrior.